You are listening to Adaptivate, a podcast that inspires industry leaders to leverage technology and new ideas to learn how to adapt, grow their businesses, and create better organizations. My name is Jeremy Miller, and I'm a marketer that currently works at GE Appliances, and I consider myself a student of business and innovation. I am talking with technologists, engineers, and business leaders about how their experiences have shaped their mindsets. Hey everybody, Jeremy Miller here, and I'm here with Frank Brooks Jr., an old colleague of mine and currently the Vice President of Software Products at Acclara. Hey Frank, how's it going?
Doing great, Jeremy. Been listening to your podcast, and I'm excited to be part of your journey.
Cool, man. I think you probably need to do something better with your time, if you got time to do that. But I appreciate your patronage. Frank, before we jump in into your thoughts and ideas about your industry, I'd love to just have our listeners hear about your background and what you do.
Sure. So, you know, currently, like you said, I'm the VP of Software Products at Acclara, and I own our ecosystem of software products from setting up field devices through managing a network for their advanced meter infrastructure. And, you know, we really concentrate on being able to provide our end users with the analytics to do billing, do different control algorithms, understand outage management and other different analytics that may be of interest to them. Prior to that, I've worked throughout the energy sector. I've been an engineer for power plant control systems. I've worked in oil and gas where we met each other on valve software products. Been in the midstream, and now I'm back to utilities. Everything I've done has had some kind of blend of pure software and then IoT products, even before IoT was the cool word to call it.
You know, as you're talking, it just dawned on me that we actually have a pretty relevant topic based on your background, especially when we think about control systems and IoT, which is security. And I know we didn't necessarily prep for this question per se, but I'm curious, actually, given the recent hack that's occurred on a lot of the government infrastructure, some of it energy related. But of course, there's always like this concern about our utilities and other energy assets being exposed or exploited. I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts on what you're seeing today in the market, or, you know, kind of what your overall feeling is on what happened, and, you know, just provide some perspective.
Yeah. So if I look at security with our current customer base, there's really two halves of it. First half is making sure that information can flow from, let's say, a meter to a utilities billing system. If a hacker can get in and shut your meter off, you don't have electricity anymore. If they can get in and they can, you know, send a fake signal from your meter, you could get a $1 billion electric bill, right? Both things would be bad. So we have to protect our data flowing through the system. And we do a couple different things there between encryption, and we're always looking at bigger, better encryption systems, as well as run a private network so we can figure out who's putting data on our network if they're not supposed to be, find bad guys quick. And then the second half of it that we really have to concentrate on is inside of these bigger utility systems, you've got a lot of information. So, you know, your utility knows your name, they probably know your social security number, they definitely know your address, you put passwords in their system, all those different things. So protecting that data also becomes paramount to the utility. So we have to consider security on both sides, right? Protecting your PII, your personal information, as well as making sure that our system can't get broken into. And it's quite the balancing act that we spend a lot of time and effort making sure we take care of.
Yeah, you know, and I was kind of reading a little bit about what was happening. You know, the thing that just occurred to me was just, you know, the attacks are sophisticated. You just have to be vigilant, and you have to make sure you're always investing. And it seems like that is still kind of the strategy of the day. And I don't know what else is being looked at, but I think those are kind of still like the key tactics, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to keep up to date and ahead of your attackers, right? If you look at all the industries I've been in, one of the reasons why they're primed for attacks is updating your software systems and firmware systems is expensive in a lot of cases, right? So I've been on projects where the customer's got software that's 10, 12, 13 years old. It becomes a prime target, right? So if you're keeping your software up to date and you're continuously applying security patches and being very diligent on making sure your system has the latest and greatest, you're a lot harder of a target to hit than you've got 10-year-old software and you're really just trying to limp along in a shoestring budget, and spending money on that software is just not going to make it into this budget cycle and, you know, so on and so forth. It becomes really easy for a hacker to eventually develop the algorithms and whatnot to get into your system.
Yeah, it makes sense. So those listening, make sure your software is up to date. That includes your laptops. Don't forget that. So let's get back on track into at least what could be considered a more fun topic, which is, you know, kind of your industry overall. You know, the utility sector, the energy sector, these are slow moving industries, right? I think you and I were joking where somebody told me if Thomas Edison woke up tomorrow, he might recognize a lot of the utility infrastructure that's in place today. So given the slow moving nature, and some of this is intentional, right? Because either the infrastructure costs or because, you know, it makes sense for safety reasons. But what have you seen in the last 10 years in terms of new thinking or innovation in the energy space? There's got to be some.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at, you know, if I just look at my career, go back further than 10 years, I started off as a data creator. And, you know, basically what I mean by that is we had a bunch of sensors out there and we'd take a reading and we'd dump it in a database. And maybe someday we'd go back and look at it. And over the last 10 years, I would consider myself more of a data interpreter. So when data flows through a system, if it doesn't come with a so what, you know, it's worthless, right? So you start to see people throughout the different portions of the energy sector expecting to have some kind of bubble up and some kind of understanding. Now, you're right. It's super slow because upgrading systems is hard. There's a lot of companies out there that'll throw, hey, I can tell you what this one thing means, and that can be expensive. Companies like to go through a long pilot cycle. You know, we had a customer back in our valve days. You know, they wanted to test our valve diagnostic software on 5 valves. Well, you go in, you put the software on, you tell them what to fix, they fix it, and then they want to run it for a year before they go and put it on all their valves. Well, in that year, if you fix a valve the right way the first time when you put the software in, that software is going to tell you nothing for 5 years or for that year on those 5 valves. So customers have to get out of this, utilities and other companies have to get out of this pile themselves to death. They really have to get into I'm going to make a business case. I'm going to follow through that business case and I'm going to be as aggressive on the implementation of business case as I am on the implementation of a pilot or something smaller inside their system.
In terms of some of the technology that's going in, you know, I think back when we were working together, it really felt like, you know, a lot of at least the hardware pieces just weren't going to change. There was just too much investment that needed to be made, or it worked good enough or whatever the case might be. But it seemed to me that in order for some of the new advances that other industries were taking advantage of, you know, they had the luxury of maybe not being totally invested in old legacy infrastructure. Is there a path for the energy sector utilities to upgrade hardware or upgrade, you know, a lot of the infrastructure that's out there?
Yeah. And you know, we're working on that path right now. So if you look at, you know, back to your example, right, Thomas Edison would recognize most of his stuff on the grid. If you look at what's on the grid now, it's a lot of dumb devices or maybe locally smart devices that don't communicate. And so, you know, step one is make these devices tell the mothership or whatnot at the utility, here's what I'm doing. Here's who I am, what I've seen, what I know. And then in a case where it may be locally controlled, what I've done, right? You can do that. You can do those slow upgrades, at least get some communication. Because once you have the data that's local to, let's take a utility example, right? If I have data on a substation, okay, that's good. If I have data on a transformer that's out at the end of the line, that's even better because now I can go and say, okay, here's what's happening out there. And then I can make really targeted investments and I don't have to go and do a blanket. I'm going to go across my whole utility all at once and upgrade hardware everywhere. I can really say, you know what? I'm going to go out to this section and do a small upgrade there. I'm going to go out to this other section, do a small upgrade there, and kind of do it in bite-sized chunks that will give me the biggest bang for the buck. And as you see different business cases paying off, then you start getting more into, okay, now I've maybe fixed these three things, how do I optimize, right? And then once I've optimized, how do, you know, at a certain maybe local area, how do I then optimize across a substation? And how do I optimize across utility? Having the tools to understand where those first targets should be is what we try to do with our data and helping our customers understand what their data tells them is, here's where the first target should be, here's what you should do, and then step back from there instead of trying to do blanket system upgrades that maybe you need to do a blanket system upgrade, but do it in a targeted fashion that gets you the continues to pay for itself as you do the rest.
I like that approach. It's really interesting that that is kind of the one common thread I think I experience when I talk to a lot of people like yourself, Frank, who are in these types of leadership positions or who are developing solutions and bringing them to market. Everybody has gravitated around this idea that choose the areas where maybe you can make the most impact. Don't necessarily, boil the ocean, right? Try to figure out the highest priorities. See if there's some way that you can influence outcomes. Bite those off. See if you can execute, scale out, right? It just seems to be this consistent theme throughout. And I feel like that's what I'm hearing too for the utility infrastructure, which when they think about solving their problems, that instead of thinking about the whole thing, they can kind of think about it in bite-sized chunks. Is that kind of a decent synthesis?
Yeah, it's perfect. And, I've heard in several of your other podcasts, right, the common theme of change is hard. Well, if you do targeted managed change, all of a sudden that becomes just the way we do it. Or I've learned that this is better over in this section where I've done the improvement. Why am I not doing it over there? And then it becomes organic change, right? And those kind of, you manage a change at first, becomes organic, and now it's just, becomes much easier than thou shalt go do all of it at once, go figure it out.
I love that. I really do. I really mean that because I believe it. Sometimes when I think about solving problems, the first part, like you said, is hard, right? You're going to make some investments. You're going to spend some time. There's going to be a lot of energy, frustration, whatever. But post that initial leap or project or whatever it ends up being, the idea is that it should organically grow, right? And be self-sustaining and have its own momentum and be able to persist. If it's the right thing, of course. There's obviously change that fails and don't do it again. But I thought that was a fantastic way to put that. I want to talk a little bit about some of the future kind of aspects of what the industry had been talking about for a long time. At least when I left, it was still really popular to talk about predictive maintenance. It was still really popular to talk about intelligent automation and artificial intelligence. And, these were not new concepts to the industry. Obviously, they've been fretting over them for decades, it seemed like. But it didn't seem like they were making kind of the big leaps towards any of that lighthouse type stuff. Is that still true? Or what's holding the industry back from actually getting to those big milestones?
Yeah. So I think if you look at, take intelligent automation, right? Customers will look at their system and say, yeah, I've got a controller over there. a lot of times what we're seeing is that control is really just a schedule-based product, right? I'm going to turn on at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to turn off at 6 o'clock at night. And I consider that automated. Maybe it fits my needs. And if I don't have enough data around it to tell me it's not the best way to do it, maybe I should turn off at 5:45 in the summer and I should turn it on at 9 p.m. in the winter type things. But once I get that data to tell me I'm not really doing it the best I could, then I can start saying, okay, I want to make this better. And what tends to happen, or at least I've seen happen in several different industries, is we put this business case together that says, I'm going to do all these great things. I'm going to go and put a controller out there and I'm going to save a bunch of money and I'm going to get this data back and I'm going to do this next step of the project. And what I've seen happen time and time again is I do the project, the initial project, I get the data creator out there. Then something happens, something comes up. I've got to spend money over here and this other thing. And we don't ever get to the data interpreter and the make it better piece. So, you see this intelligent automation starting to come in because companies are finally getting to the point where they're getting to the next step in their business case. And that's slower for certain customers than others. The other thing that you've asked about, which I think has been kind of held at bay, if you will, for a while, is artificial intelligence. And there's going to be no choice on how artificial intelligence makes it into utilities and PowerPoint, stuff like that. It's already happening. But the more we start putting different things on the system where Thomas Edison won't recognize it, right? He's not going to recognize a bunch of solar panels and wind turbines on a grid, right? He's not going to recognize that you don't have stable load for the whole day if you want it. As those little things come on the grid, you've got to have solutions that can go figure it out in real time instead of wait for somebody to make a decision. So to give you a good example right now is we've developed some artificial intelligence around finding an electric vehicle. So utilities have this big problem where people start plugging in their electric vehicles as soon as they get home from work, puts a huge strain on the grid at the same time as they go, they plug in their electric vehicle, they walk in, they turn up the heat, they go start cooking dinner, they go, they do whatever they're going to do. And it's just like this huge load all of a sudden hits the grid versus, the way it was the day before they owned an electric vehicle, there was a significant load that wasn't part of that user's day-to-day life. So you're starting to see with EVs is driving the need to have artificial intelligence. And once you start getting it and you start using it and making the changes that you can start, that you can make, you will see your customers start adopting the fact that, oh, this isn't scary anymore. Actually, it paid for itself 3 times. Why am I not doing more of it? And that's just where we really get the ball rolling. But I think you're right. It's been really slow to adopt. It's been out there for a long time, but now you have external factors in all industries, but specifically in utilities today that are going to take it from this was a great idea to I have to have it to survive.
I think in some ways too, in the software world, right? If you think about the big, like the Googles, the Facebooks, the whoever, they leverage a lot of AI. They're kind of born in that age, right? So it was almost kind of part of their almost inception, right? In some ways, Google was a machine learning company that applied their technology to search. That's not a fact, but I'm just, relating to it. Whereas, for you and I today working in, industrials or manufacturing, we've been around a long time and a lot of our key decisions about who we are and, where we are today happened, in some cases before the light bulb. So, it's moving slow, I think is, it's relative, right?
Look at the example you gave, Netflix. Netflix wouldn't exist if they didn't have artificial intelligence. Because if they couldn't keep you getting the next movie, the next movie, the next movie, what good would they have been? And that's what you're going to start seeing. They had to be like that from the get-go. There was no choice for Netflix, right? They had to incorporate those techniques in right off the bat, or else your business case falls apart. Utilities have to, have to provide you power. Refineries have to make sure they're refining. Everything else is secondary for them. So it's until they have that need to adapt, it'll be slow. You'll have your bleeding edges, you'll have your laggards, and slowly the laggards will move over as required.
And I think that's such a great way to put it, in terms of your core function and what you need to deliver. And then I think the other thing, for people listening, which I think is maybe important to call out, is that certain types of change may not come as easily or quickly for you. It doesn't mean you shouldn't necessarily do them, but you should also not get frustrated if you don't see yourself moving as quickly as, a Google or a Netflix in certain areas, because, if you ask Netflix to try to drive change in your sector or to try to solve some of the problems you're trying to solve, it would probably be tough for them, right? It would be really hard to develop that muscle and to start to try to apply those tactics or strategies to get growth. And so I think in some ways, right, people need to give themselves a break and go back to that idea that you shared earlier, which is find the areas where you can make the biggest impact and focus on those versus, driving organizational change all at once in one big giant sweeping initiative that is probably destined to fail, if not drive you crazy.
Yeah, there's something important in there. Every company, and I probably shouldn't say this because I'm the software guy, right? But every company has got to evaluate the risk and reward of adding the new bit of software. So I've seen refineries where they're making $1 million a day, right, in revenue from the products they're pumping out. To shut down for 3 days to do a major software upgrade that might save them $50,000 a year takes a lot of years to pay back that $1 million a day they lost, right? So it's not always go do it, jump right in. You got to look at what's the risk. What's the risk if the software goes down and I lose a day of operation later on? There's a lot to it, especially in these industries where it's a utility. You don't want your power going out because utility did a software upgrade. You don't want a refinery shut down because they did a small software upgrade. So you gotta weigh both sides of the coin. You're right. You don't always have to be the fastest guy in the block. You have to do what's right for your business first while doing the targeted improvements that you can get fairly easily, let's say.
I think that's a really good segue into the next question, which was, how do you actually communicate to your customers about either adopting a new solution or embracing a new idea? I mean, especially in your industry, right? You don't just have the costs associated with downtime and all sorts of things, but you have to take into account, or at least your customers have to take into account, things like safety, right? I mean, people's lives are at stake in managing a lot of these plant operations, right? So there's a lot of things that need to be taken into account. And so I have to imagine that the decision-making process, I experienced it firsthand, so I guess I'm trying to get your perspective, but how do you communicate with your customers? Like, how do you actually relate to them some of the things that you're doing and how it might benefit them? Like, what are the tactics you use?
It's interesting because I don't have a direct sales role, so I think I'm able to ask more questions. And I don't necessarily, because I'm a product development guy, I can ask questions for what might be the product tomorrow. And I think that's set me up pretty well. When I'm talking to my customers and I'm trying to figure out how to best help them reach whatever their next strategic goal is, I get to ask a lot of whys, right? And kind of to put it in a non-technical way of thinking of things, right? I can ask a customer, what's your problem? And they can say, I burned my finger. And I can give them some ointment and they go away and they're happy and they come back a week later. What's your problem? I burned my finger again. As a sales guy, I would keep selling you ointment. But as a product guy, why'd you burn your finger? Well, I'm a blacksmith and I deal with hot metals. Well, let me talk about gloves, right? And you can start diagnosing where the problems come from And as you get to the heart of this is how I run my business, right? Not all utilities are the same. Not all refineries or power plants are the same. This is how I run my business. This is what I do. Now I can start taking into account your strategic initiatives, the way you use my products, and then I can come up with the right answer for you based on here's what I have, here's what I'm developing, here's what you may need in the future, so that you feel like, you know, my goal is when I get out of a room, you feel like I'm your trusted advisor, not somebody else is coming in to make a sale and go on to the next guy.
Yeah, and I wonder too, you know, if there's like opportunities in the sales world to get people to start asking those types of questions. I mean, I've worked with some salespeople who are definitely able to kind of get to those underlying kind of needs and stuff like that. But I know being a salesperson though, you know, the pressures are so high sometimes, right? That, you know, you're the tip of the spear. You're just trying to work as hard as you can to, you know, win customers and drive more opportunity into the pipeline. So I wonder if there's an area of innovation there strategically that could be focused on. And I'm sure a lot of people think about it. So if anybody's out there that wants to basically say, you guys don't know what you're talking about, you know, carried the bag, reach out to me and tell me why we're so dumb and wrong. Or at least me, Frank Smart.
I didn't mean to underwhelm because I do think there's, especially in some of these longer cycle businesses, our sales guys have to get embedded early, and they do to some extent understand the strategic initiatives of the customers. But I think the innovation comes from allowing a sales team to have the flexibility to maybe sell a product that you don't quite have, right? And we do that quite often in our businesses. We sell forward because we know if a customer's got a problem, they're getting three different consultants coming in telling them what's, you know, here's how you could fix it. And, you know, our sales guys have to be smart enough to know our system, know maybe what the roadmap is a year out, and then make decisions on how they ask the questions that could put us in the best light. And I think conditioning your sales guys to be, you know, have a little bit of product mindset, maybe a little bit of technical background is what helps you excel, especially in these, like I said, these longer cycle businesses that we're in.
Yeah. And at the same time, right, you got to be able to be there as you are and basically said, you know, to back the sales team up, especially if you are asking to go out on that limb. But you know, I think the bring it full circle to me, I agree with you 100%. Trying to understand the underlying needs and desires of your customer, right? There's this one agency, I think they're called Story Brand. You know, they have this idea of the external and internal problem. The external problem is like that burn, like you talked about, and the internal problem is that bigger idea that you're really suffering from that you need solved that manifests itself in a burn, but also manifests itself in like 12 other ways. And so I find that tool, at least for me, incredibly helpful sometimes, at least when I work on my messaging and positioning. So one thing that I always like to do on the podcast, obviously, is to give people something to take away. Obviously besides just your stories and your experience, but you know, your career in this industry, I guess my question, there'd be a couple things. One, if you haven't spent time in this industry, it is incredibly fascinating. And I'm curious, Frank, if you have any recommendations on resources or books or anything that somebody could interact with or read relative to either the oil and gas industry, utility or energy sector. And then the other is just maybe things that you're looking at today and, you know, something that you might want to call out for people that could help them in their jobs or careers.
Yeah, you know, the biggest tools I've used, kind of start with your second question first, biggest tools I've used recently that I think really have changed the way I thought about product development is Scaled Agile Framework. So we've introduced SAFE into our group about a year and a half ago now, and it really changes the way you think about product development and What are your real true priorities? What are your customers' true priorities? And then how do I develop a product that's, you know, not minimum viable product, but minimum marketable product that our customers are going to want to buy, want to use, and then you can grow on it later as needed based on questions they ask or deficiencies they find or questions you ask because you want to make your product better. So that scaled down framework is really a good tool to bring in people from across the organization, the hardware developers, the system engineers, the sales guys, the people that are in front of the customers and technical advisor roles, type stuff like that. Get them all into a room and start talking about what the problems are, what are the next things we're going to do to serve our customers. So I would definitely recommend looking into that if you're in a software or IoT world, because it's a super powerful tool. You know, if I look at where the industry is going, I like to use the smart energy guys, SECC, because they've got a lot of good balance of what customers are thinking about. You know, it's not a book, it's more a website, but what are customers thinking about? What's some of the technologies out there? And, you know, I kind of browse their website from time to time just to get a good feel for what's happening in the industry and what are some of the things I should expect next.
Was that last one
SECC?
CC, SECC. So definitely check that one out. Well, Frank, any last thoughts for the listeners on the podcast before we sign off?
Yeah, you know, I think the last thing I'd leave you with is as you're looking at what your product's going to be next and when you're looking at how do you best serve your customers, you know, Always consider the five whys. How do we get to the bottom of what the actual problem is? Right back to the example I gave, right? I burn my finger because I touch hot metal. How do I fix that problem instead of fixing the burned finger? Those are the things that as you start understanding where your customers are coming from and why they're saying the things they say or they're having the problems they're having, that's what's going to make you successful. And that's what's going to drive those adoptions a lot faster than any other techniques you may have to try to convince your customers predictive maintenance is the best thing or artificial intelligence is going to solve world hunger, stuff like that. So I would definitely recommend as you develop products, understand not why the customer is asking the first question or making the first complaint, but you know, what's really underlying in what they're saying.
I think that's fantastic advice, Frank. Thanks so much for coming on. You know, it was great to connect with you again. I know it had been a long time, so I was really glad to have you and to hear how things were going and all the great things you're working on.
Yeah, it's been a blast. Appreciate you having me.